Our motive is we have seen business owners hurting for cash flow. We have a place to store money that we believe is better than the bank.
You just have a lot more options.
It cannot go down in value.
Growing money and moving towards time and money freedom even faster.
Hey everyone, Dave Menz, Laundromat Millionaire, coming to you from Cincinnati, Ohio. I'm here, you guessed it, with my better half, Carla. We're going to have another great show for you today, and I'm actually super excited because it's hard to believe, Carla, but this is episode number 40. That's kind of crazy. This is the last episode of our second season, and it honestly just seems like the other day that we were getting started and didn't know what we were doing.
Here we are, somehow we still don't know what we're doing.
We still don't know what we're doing, but hey, we've had 40 really cool guests on the show with us. And this is going to be another one that's going to kind of knock your socks off. I think you're going to be really surprised. We're going to dig into the concept of infinite banking, which we've done a little bit in the past. And that's going to be really fun. But the cool thing is we have two guests with us today. So I'm really excited because whenever we get more than one guest on the show, we can kind of hit it from two different angles. Mm-hmm. You know, even if they're business partners or married or whatever, everybody comes to things from a different perspective, and that's going to be one of the cool things about this show today. So anyways, I'm excited to get this started. Thank you for being here today. You want to introduce our guests?
Yes. So today with us, we have Rachel Marshall and Bruce Wehner of The Money Advantage. It is a business which focuses on helping clients keep more of the money they make, protect it, and turn it into cash flowing assets. In addition to their financial consulting business, they also have their own podcast by the same name, The Money Advantage. So be sure to check that out. So Rachel and Bruce, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having us. This is really a pleasure.
Yeah, this is what I live for, talking to business owners. So this is, and frankly, laundromat owners are some of the best type of business owners, I think, because they're providing a really, really helpful service in communities that need it. And that's what you get paid for all the time as a business owner, is providing a helpful service. So I think they are just wonderful. They are salt of the earth people. They are people that like to work with their hands. They like to get involved with their customers. So I'm really enjoying trying to add value to your listeners today.
We appreciate that very much. We really try to focus on that aspect of the business. I mean, as Christians too, like, it's an opportunity to serve. It's all about serving that community and making a change in the community. So we love that you appreciate that.
Well, and for some reason, guys, I don't know where this comes from. It drives me crazy. People assume that you either have to do that, meaning like you're a nonprofit, like I'm a saint, I'm holding, you know, premature babies at the hospital and soothing them and not being paid. And don't get me wrong, it's an amazing thing, and you are a saint if you're doing that. But it's like you have to do that, which means you're not making money, or you have to make money. Like, you have to choose. Are you going to serve people and do good, or are you going to make money? And that's like the biggest load of crap on the planet, right?
Mm-hmm,
like, all of us business owners know that, and I'll just say it. It's ridiculous. So anyways, that's one of the cool things about having people like you on the show, is we can kind of just take that and squash it. And then we can talk about, how do we do this the right way? And what are some strategies behind? And should we feel guilty about the fact that we are serving our community and by default making money? And if we, you know, Bruce, I know you said, you know, you're kind of a cash flow expert, and I'm hoping to learn a lot from you today. Hey, who doesn't want more cash flow, right?
Yeah.
And should we feel sorry? You know, like, should we apologize for that? Which the answer is no, by the way. Spoiler alert. But anyway, I want to dive right into this. We could go all day, and I have a feeling we're going to. But where we want to start this show today is just give us a little bit of context, because I'll just like point it out. Like, you guys aren't married, right? You're just business partners. And
I was going to say that earlier when you said business partners married, not married in this case.
Me and Carla are married, and you all are not. And you co-founded the Money Advantage. Business together, and then you have a podcast, and that's actually how we met. Just so all everybody knows, I was a guest on their podcast, kind of sharing my journey in the laundromat industry, and we kind of clicked and hit it off and realized, like, we were all good people for the most part. Me a little less than you guys, but I mean, we were all good people. And I was like, hey, you guys should come share what you have going on our show. So anyways, how did you guys meet? How did you guys put this thing together? Are you lifelong friends, or how did this come to be?
It feels like it now, doesn't it, Bruce?
It absolutely does. I'll let Rachel, because I think she has a good perspective on this whole thing.
Okay.
So from my vantage point, my husband and I got into wanting to start a business, and kind of like you, Carla and Dave, we were in a position of saying, what are we going to do? I mean, are we going to own a Subway shop? Are we going to start a cleaning franchise? What are we going to do? We just really want to own a business. We had read Robert Kiyosaki and we said, how do we get into business ownership? And we started a health insurance agency and we were selling health insurance. And as a result of that, the health and life insurance license has commonality because you study for the same exam. And as we're reading and studying for our exam, this was about 10 years ago now, we saw this line and it was talking about cash value life insurance, just kind of tucked away in our mind a little bit. But Lucas had, my husband, had been introduced to the concept before and kind of dismissed it. Well, we kept that tucked in the back of our mind and ultimately ended up serving business owners with health insurance needs right around the time ACA was changing and health insurance was going to the Affordable Care Act. And there was all this upheaval in that industry. And we realized that we didn't necessarily like the commodity nature of health insurance, but the most intriguing thing is we found out we were serving business owners because those were the ones who were needing health insurance that didn't have it offered from their large employer. And so we started really diving into the lives of business owners and what their true needs were. And we were starting to see so much more than just the need for what health insurance plan do I buy for my employees. It was really about how do I manage my life and my business to create what I'm trying to create in business and manage the money effectively. And so we just started seeing all of these questions coming up. Now, my husband being the accuracy guy, the historical buff, he's a huge reader. So he'd been doing a lot of reading and we were aware of the Nelson Nash Institute. We'd read Becoming Your Own Banker. And this was the very beginning part of what infinite banking is all about, written by Nelson Nash. And so we were on his email list and we were learning more about that, mostly for ourselves personally, saying, how do we personally create wealth? And then how do we teach this to other people? We ended up finding out about an event that Bruce and his team were leading in St. Louis by E3 Wealth. And they were really looking to expand the industry, make it better, help people to be collaborative, and specifically help people with this traditional way of managing money that's different than the typical way of managing money. And I can give a little tiny distinction on that. We'll tease that out a little bit later. But the typical way usually is stick your money in a 401k, hope everything works out. And that's not working for the majority of Americans. And so the traditional way really leans back on more traditional products that have more guarantees, like whole life insurance and savings and having a place to store cash. So all of that being said, we met Bruce and his team. We got to meet Nelson Nash at that event and just a profound meeting. He's actually a mentor of Bruce's as well. And just through that developed a relationship that as we were continuing to educate people about infinite banking, I was creating videos on YouTube. I really wanted a deeper format to teach people more than just what we could do in 5-10 minute video chunks. Mm-hmm. And so we thought about a podcast and Lucas calls up Bruce because I did not have the courage to do this and said, hey, Bruce, would you be willing to host a podcast with Rachel? End of conversation. I thought it was going to be the end. Bruce said, sure, why not? So we started a podcast. This was in May of 4.5 years ago, five-ish years. I think
it's 17. I thought it was May of.
Yeah, 5 years ago because we started recording, getting some episodes banked. And then we launched November 30th of that year. And it's been about 4.5 years that we've been live now with the podcast. So that then turned into how do we serve the clients that are coming to us who are finding out about infinite banking from our show and really just being able to provide that education and then provide the tools and resources for them to keep in control more money and make good financial decisions and maximize their cash flow. Bruce, is there anything you'd add there?
No, I mean, Rachel does a great job of summarizing things. I tend to go down some rabbit holes occasionally, but, you know.
Just occasionally, Bruce.
Here's the thing. Business owners, we were sick and tired as a wealth firm. We didn't do this, but we were sick and tired of seeing business owners getting typical financial advice. Mm-hmm. They would go to their CPA. They would go to a financial planner. And by the way, I'm also an investment advisor. So I'm not just an insurance producer. And I didn't mean just as in that's a bad thing, but they were getting the typical financial advice is, oh, you're going to want to retire someday, so you need to put your money into a SEP IRA or a 401k that we have to establish in money. So I got this, I got to talking to them, and I'm like, hey, all that's doing is sucking cash flow out of your business and putting it somewhere that you can touch that you don't have any control of over. We have different ways that we can actually help build your business and you maintain control. Because this is what I would ask them. I would ask the business owner, if you have if somebody just gave you $100,000 and you put it into your 401k, what would you expect that to grow to on a per annual basis percentage wise? I don't even care what they say. You know, they could say 5%, they could say 7%, they could say 10%, they could say 15%. I don't even care what it is. And I say, now, what if I took that same $100,000 and I gave it to you to put into your business or to start a business? How much would you expect then? Oh, I could probably do 20, 25, 30, 35% return on that money. And then I would try to just shut up, because they have to internalize that concept, because that concept is like, you know, I never thought of it that way. Why am I doing that? Because if you can build up your, in your guys' case, your laundromat empire, the return on that, if you wanted to retire, which I'm not sure why you'd want to retire, because you have the greatest cash flow machine available, your business, as long as you set up, why, if you did want to retire, why wouldn't you build up the revenue stream so that your multiplier when you do sell it is a lot greater than it would be if you were to put the money outside in it? Now, I must admit, I still have that attitude, but I do have a slightly different attitude since COVID. And what I realized since COVID is, even though you try to get most things into your control, not everything is in your control. Okay, so there's things out of our control, such as a pandemic, but what's also out of our control, which we all found out during COVID, is our government continues to want to manipulate our lives. Mm-hmm. And because of that now, what we have kind of pivoted a little bit is, well, let's not necessarily put that money into a 401k where you can't get to it, but maybe we ought to get some of that money outside of your business into cash flowing assets outside of your business, so we get a little diversification. And then you can use that cash flow to also build up your business going back to, and so we got a circular thing here now instead of all of it, because, you know, there was restaurant owners during that, there was manufacturers during the pandemic that no matter what kind of government assistance they got, they folded. And so putting all that money back into their business was maybe not the best thing for them. So now we've got a hybrid model that we present people for cash flow and also build your business. So that's how we started our philosophies. That's how we started our journey together. And we continue to evolve to make this better and better and better for our business owners.
Hey guys, this is your girl Lira, and you're listening to Self-Reflection Podcast. Thank you guys for joining me on another episode of Self-Reflection Podcast. I hope this podcast episode finds you in the best possible state that you can be in for yourself today. You know, and if you're not doing your best, I hope, you know, you find some time to care for your mental health, physical health, emotional health, spiritual health, and your psychological health. You know, I hope you find some time to do some self-reflection. Just gather yourself and, you know, find the best possible way you can deal with what you're dealing with in this moment, right?
Are you renovating your store or building a new one? Tired of persistent and expensive plumbing issues like I was? Get an HM Company drain trough to give those drain lines a fighting chance against the constant wear and tear of laundromat life. Sizing is fully customizable to meet your needs, and lead times are a maximum of 2 weeks. I've used them in my stores in Cincinnati for years, and I'm installing them in my new store, which is opening soon. Visit their website today at draintroughs.com and contact your distributor to order your drain trough today.
Bruce, I want to dive into what you everything you just said in a second. But before I do, can you walk us back a little bit and explain to us, and I know this is just your opinion, but and Rachel, feel free to jump in too. I'm not sure who to direct questions to here.
we'll take it as needed.
Yeah, whoever's most appropriate. So why is it that everything we've been told is, I don't know if I want to say wrong.
No longer the best option.
Yeah. Or maybe or
maybe it never was.
Or are you saying it's not the best option for business owners or entrepreneurs? Like, can you break that down for us? Because I think, like, you know, when we've been kind of, I like to use the word brainwashed, and I know that's negative connotation, but that's honestly how I see it. We've been brainwashed that, like, the 401k is the answer to everything and the IRA and all these different things. And if you don't do that, then you're irresponsible, right? You're a terrible parent and you want your kids to be poor. And, like, I mean, it's kind of crazy how this goes. Why is that? Is my question.
You have very good questions, by the way. I love the insight behind that.
Yeah. So, you know, when you think about it, every nation was kind of built. Once again, I'm going down a rabbit hole, Dave. So
I know, sorry.
So what's interesting, there's certain cultures that look at the world differently. And they usually are more third world cultures. Think about this. I've asked people from Africa that have come to the United States, and some of them are clients. Why is it that every one of the times I meet somebody, I'm just going to use an example from Nigeria, they don't get into the corporate world. They always get into some kind of entrepreneurial venture. And I finally got the answer from one of them. Well, because in Nigeria, the government doesn't help us. So we have to think entrepreneurial to survive. Well, that means every time the Western world moves more and more away from freedoms and liberties, we get more socialistic. And so we lose that entrepreneurial spirit. And that is what I basically would say has happened since the Great Recession. And we had the New Deal from Roosevelt, and it just kept evolving. And then it accelerated in 1973 when Richard Nixon took us off the gold standard, and we had tremendous inflation in the 70s and early 80s. And then it accelerated some more in 1979. And Rachel and I both had Ted Benna on our podcast. He is the father of the 401k. He's in his 90s now, but he's the father of the 401k. And it was never designed. He never wanted it to be the main retirement vehicle. And he was passionately trying to get that out. And so when 1979 hit in the early 80s now, all of a sudden people had to take control over their own finances, because before it was the pension system that was happening. So now this new thing came about, financial planning, and the industry came about. So and this is what Rachel was teasing earlier, financial planning now we call typical financial planning, because that's what typically just happens. Oh, you need to give us all your money you can systematically. We'd love to get it in a systematic way, because then you don't feel it coming out of your paycheck a little bit. You got to give it to us. We got to hold it for as long as possible. And then we're going to trickle it back to you in retirement in little pieces. So that's typical financial planning. Traditional financial planning before that was actually a savings plan and building up businesses. And where one of the greatest savings plans before that was actually cash-valued life insurance. Before the 70s, most households were actually storing money in cash-valued life insurance because it wasn't tied to the stock market, because most people at that time didn't have access to the stock market because there was just stocks. It wasn't until 79 when everybody got introduced to the stock market and you could actually buy small baskets of stocks called mutual funds is where now all of a sudden the typical financial planning came. So that is, Dave, I think that is what's caused that change, in my opinion, over the time period of about 125 years. And I'm sure Rachel has on some other, you know, things that she could add.
I'll add, I never necessarily considered what caused it from the beginning. And that's why I appreciated your question so much, because that really makes you peg it to one thing, right? So when I think people like to be in control, but ultimately you have people trying to figure out how to be in control of other people. And whenever you're looking to be in control of other people, it's the wrong motive. And the problem is that if the people who want to be in control of other people can get the people they want to be in control of to believe it's for their good, mm-hmm. and get them to not trust themselves and have to depend on someone else, they can sway and manipulate masses to do what's in their best interest. And I think ultimately, I mean, I believe that people are created to be good, that God designed each one of us. But I think sometimes we can get off track in desire to control other people. And I think there's this piece of human nature that tries to be in that position. And unfortunately, most of us then, I mean, if you just look at incrementally what's happened over time, if you have an education system that teaches people, this is what to think, not this is how to think critically and how to analyze information. This is what to believe. Okay, well, then they take what they have been told to believe. And then you have a society that's just told, well, this is now how you should handle your money. And we have people who are great at marketing, directing commercials and advertising to making us all believe that we're completely inadequate and we need their product to be able to fix and patch all of these inadequacies in ourselves. I mean, the challenge is that it turns into this power struggle. And what we don't realize is that when we just go with the flow, we get the average. And if you want to be average and just fit in, well, that's great, I guess. But if we really want to own our own life, control our own destiny, take that personal responsibility, it requires thinking independently and challenging what we're told and choosing to take ownership. And that's what then allows us to recognize, well, there's two parties to every contract. If we're told the best thing for you to do is to put your money in this bank, the best thing for you to do is to pay off your mortgage as fast as possible. Get out of debt. Debt is bad. You need to pay off every single piece of debt. Don't ever have any debt. Well, that can then lead us down this path of feeling that it must be a moral thing. I need to, in order to be right and good, I have to make these certain choices. But we never stop and consider who's telling us this and why are they telling us, and is it in their favor for me to do this, or is it for my good? And I mean, this is a funny little story, but my daughter is 10 years old and we got her a Labradoodle for her birthday. So she's getting a wonderful experience of learning how to train and discipline and teach a Labradoodle who is very naughty sometimes and eats the Barbies and digs up the backyard. She does the things she's totally not supposed to do. So my question to her sometimes, to my daughter, is, did you respond to Francie the puppy for her good or out of your frustration? And I think we all need to realize that there's a motive of people and information that we're getting. Is it for our good or is it for their good? And just being able to ask that question and be a little bit more skeptical and less trusting, and really be able to make decisions for ourselves. That really is the path that you need to separate yourselves from having things taken from you that you really deserve to have.
Well, and I think sometimes the person can have the best of intentions. Like I'm thinking of like a broker or whatever that's managing your money. They may have the best intentions for making you money, but at the end of the day, that risk is yours, not theirs. Will they feel bad if you lose money? I'm sure they will, but not as bad as you feel losing your money.
Well, okay. I use that example all the time because there's this big push now by the government that you should only work with a fiduciary. I don't know if you've heard this on television, you know, and there's a couple of companies, I won't mention them. One begins with an F. You know, they come on the commercial and they say, we're a fiduciary. We only do what's in the best interest of our clients. And then the moderator says, so you do it because you have to? And they say, no, we do it because it's the right thing to do. And I'm thinking, Well, then why can't a non-fiduciary, somebody that's that doesn't have all these certifications, do it because it's the right thing to do? And think about it. So all the idea is a fiduciary is you have to have your best interest. Well, one of the things they think the best interest is if you apply a fee for assets under management. So if you give somebody $1 million and they charge you a 1% asset under management fee, then that 1% would be $10,000 fee every year. Okay. So what would happen? Yeah, I did that right. What would happen then is if that $1 million went to $2 million, they're saying that's the best way to do it because you're in it with them. Okay. Because now you're incented to make $2 million because now you're going to make $20,000 a year. However, in 2008, that $1 million would have went to $500,000. You lost $500,000, but the investment advisor went from $10,000 to $5,000. Now, let me ask you that question. Who's hurting more? Somebody lost $500,000 or somebody lost $5,000? And so that's why I don't know if the government who has put in these rules, they have unintended consequences. And that's what you're saying, right? Mm-hmm. They think it's a good thing, but I was just talking about this with one of my buddies last night. He was saying, you know, I wonder what the makeup of business owners, because Rabbi Daniel Lappin, who we had on our show yesterday, he said he believes that everybody that runs in government should have to have been a business owner at one time.
A successful business owner, yes.
Yeah, a successful business owner at one time. And yet probably 80% of them are lawyers. Mm-hmm. And they look at the world much different thing, like justice. I will make sure justice prevails. Well, justice prevails according to who's mm-hmm. according to whom, you know? And that's where you run into all kinds of issues. And by the way, we encourage people to also question what the Money Advantage is offering them and why they're offering them mm-hmm. this. Mm-hmm. We have no problem people questioning us what our motives are. Our motive is we have seen business owners hurting for cash flow. We have a place to store money that we believe is better than the bank, mm-hmm. and it has pros and cons. And we get paid very well because we provide a very good service for that is more advantageous. And we don't have a problem with people getting paid very well when they provide a very good service, just mm-hmm. like your laundromat owners providing a great service. They get paid very well.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Rachel, before I move on, and I want to ask you guys for a little spoiler, and I want to ask you for what is the definition of infinite banking? And then I know you guys have said that there's five common myths, and I would love for you to kind of lay those out.
Usually the messages that we're getting from mortgage companies, from banking institutions, from the general investment advice is put your money with this company, then everything is going to go well for you. And they're usually more in control of your money. Instead, you want to recognize there's the bank and there's the customer of the bank. Instead of just being the customer of the bank who is giving up cash flow, giving up the ability to earn interest, giving up the capital, we want to think about how can we insert ourselves into the position of being the bank, which means how do we get as much capital as possible? How do we hold it as long as possible? How do we earn as much interest on that money as possible? How do we give up as little cash as possible? How do we take as little of risk? How do we earn arbitrage or use leverage to make more money with that money? So infinite banking. So here is in a nutshell, infinite banking is a strategy of using a particular product. But it's most a strategy. It's a strategy of using specially designed whole life insurance that's dividend paying with a mutual company, and it's a high cash value product. So I guess I could say that a little differently, but it's mostly a strategy. It's a strategy of storing capital in a place that you're getting the most safety, the most liquidity, and the most growth. So it's growing. It's not going to lose value, and I can use it. I can access this capital. And it's a strategy of storing cash and then being able to use it at the same time. So I'm earning returns in two places at the same time. meaning that I am growing money and moving towards time and money freedom even faster.
Yeah. And the thing that I'm sure listeners are going to say now, wait a minute, that doesn't work like that. And that's too good to be true.
But what's the catch?
Well, I'll just tell you, I'm sure you have some of your laundromat owners that own their buildings where their laundromats are.
We do.
If they went to the bank, they're going to say, hey, can I borrow against my equipment or can I borrow against my commercial building? And they would, and if they have enough equity in it, and if they have enough cash, they're going to say, sure. And in that case, then they take the money and they can go buy another laundromat. Well, now the commercial building and the business is still going up in value, hopefully, and they're earning money over here. Now, the difference that Special Design Whole Life Insurance contract is that it cannot go down in value. The commercial building can go down in value. Okay, so that's one of the that's one of the reasons that people would consider doing it with a Special Design Whole Life Insurance contract. And this is actually one of the myths that it's an awful investment. Well, that's because we don't consider this an investment because it has guarantees. We agree. If you're calling it an investment has risk. Okay. Every investment has risk. This is not an investment. That's one of the myths. So it's not too good to be true because you're not actually borrowing your money. You're borrowing from the cash reserves of the insurance company. So the insurance company has cash reserves. And because you have your money at their institution, they're going to allow you to use that as collateral. What's that sound like? What I just said with the commercial real estate. Mm-hmm. The commercial real estate has a mortgage at the bank. Oh, we have the collateral already established. We'll let you borrow against in a home equity line of credit, or in this case, it'd be a business line of credit against your collateral. It's not magic. I tell people this all the time. There are people that are trying to dispel this with myths. What is their motive of dispelling it with myths? Well, that's because they don't want people to put money in a place that traditionally returns 3 to 5% tax-free. And when you do the tax equivalent, that's a pretty good return with little to no risk. So what is their motive? Well, they don't want you to put the money in the cash value life insurance. They want you to put it into an investment. So they poo-poo that situation.
And you know what? I think there's actually way more than five myths as well. Right. Can I take the next one?
Sure. Go ahead.
So I'm going to say that whole life insurance is too expensive. I think that's a big challenge. And we see this come from some people who are very loud in the financial space and talking about
entertainment space.
I was like, is that negative to say? Probably. The financial entertainment space, yes, that many people know household names who would say whole life insurance is terrible. It's a scam, we've heard. It's terrible and you should never put money in, and especially because it's too expensive. Well, then Bruce's famous question, compared to what? Well, normally, if you think of just insurance, life insurance, as I'm insuring my ability to have a death benefit payout to my family if I pass away. Well, the cheapest form of that insurance that's going to do that job is going to be term insurance. However, term insurance and whole life insurance are two completely different products. Term insurance, generally, it has a time limit attached to it. So 10, 20, 30 years. Those are some average ones. There's other timeframes as well. But during that timeframe, if you pass away, the death benefit pays out. It's just simply that it's death insurance. It pays if you die. Nothing available during your lifetime to access and use. So whole life insurance, if you think of it just from the insurance side as insurance, well, yes, it also has a death benefit and you are going to pay a lot more in premium for that amount of death benefit. However, there's all these living benefits. And what I mean by that is that you can't compare it. It's not apples to apples in any way. It's a completely different type of tool. We really think of it as a place to store cash. So it is a place where you can put your dollars in. You're growing a death benefit that absolutely will pay out whenever you die, even if you live to 121. The contract goes up to 121. At that point, it will pay out fully the death benefit to you if you're still living. I say, if you defy all odds of human life expectancy in this time frame of our lives. So not only will it guarantee to pay out, in addition, you have access to use the capital, kind of like equity along the way. So if the death benefit was the home value, the cash value is a portion of the death benefit, kind of like equity in your house, that you can borrow against and you can use, which means I can access this capital for anything, for an emergency, for an opportunity, for an investment.
Rachel, wouldn't it be much more liquid, though, than equity in a building? Like, we have refinanced a property, and it's like a giant pain in the butt. You know, I mean, only go up to 80% or all these, you know, sometimes depending on their risk tolerance, only up to 70% on a commercial property and all these different things. Like, I don't know if I'm not the expert you guys are, but I mean, if that's my money, I just like –
You just withdraw it, like a bank account.
You simply sign a piece of paper that says you want to borrow against your collateral. That's all you do.
It's a guaranteed access to your capital.
And I guess if I put myself in their situation in the life insurance companies, it's like they're the both sides, right? Is that am I looking at that the right way?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Right. And if something happened and you didn't repay the money you went out. That you took out, then that's just less death benefits you would get.
So their risk, their risk for doing this transaction is really low.
Mm-hmm. Very low.
Yeah, absolutely. Very
low. People ask us that question. Why do they do this?
Right.
And I give them two answers. One is because in order to do business in every state, because insurance is regulated by the states, not by the federal government. Mm-hmm. They require that you have access to loans. It's required. So by contract, by the states, it's required. The second reason they do it is because it's actually a great return for the insurance company because they charge these loans. They charge 5% interest. Well, the interest goes back to the insurance company, but it's a mutual company. So who benefits from them making 5%? The policyholders, because the policyholders are part owners in the company.
And will get paid out a dividend as the insurance company is most profitable. So the more profitable the insurance company is, the more the dividend is paid.
Is that 5% just fixed, Bruce, that you were referring to?
No, it's a variable rate, but most of the contracts, it's fixed at, it doesn't go over 8%. But really, Dave, the interest rates, and I know this is going to blow people's minds, they're irrelevant.
Yeah, I understand that.
It could be 10% because it's based upon the Moody's Bond Index. And the Moody's Bond Index is an index of bonds that control interest rates for different entities across not only the United States, but the world. Well, most of the investment returns that insurance companies make are by investing in bonds. So if bond rates go up, that means interest rates go up. That means they're going to charge you more for borrowing against your money, but they're also going to have higher dividends. So traditionally the dividends and the borrow against your money have always worked in concert going like this. Okay. Yes, you have lesser interest rates to borrow and your dividends go down. As interest rates go up to borrow, dividends go up because the insurance companies can make more on their bonds. So I don't want to be disrespectful when I tell people interest rates are irrelevant if you understand macroeconomics.
Yeah, that is so valuable to understand as you're getting into a position of recognizing whole life insurance is not just expensive. As that myth, it's not just a overexpensive life insurance product. What it is, it's a place to store cash that absolutely it's safe. And as you mentioned, it's very liquid. So I was going to say it's like borrowing equity from a house, except for you don't have to qualify for anything. Yes, it is literally saying, I want the check, send me the check. And then you don't have structured payments either. So you don't have to pay back on a fixed schedule of say 30 years and you have to make this payment or you're going to default on the loan or they're going to take something from you. You can choose to pay back all at once if you want or nothing for several years and let the interest just continue to accrue on that loan and then pay it back all in a lump sum. You just have a lot of control because it's your cash value, and you can borrow against it with a guaranteed access whenever you want. So the big picture, if we step back from that, whole life insurance is really expensive. Term life insurance rarely actually pays out because most people outlive the term, and then they're in a position where maybe 1-2% of the policies are actually paying out. For the insurance company, it's a lot more profitable. And for you as the consumer, well, congratulations, you're still alive at the end of the term, but do you really want to keep paying the premiums? And does it financially even make sense? We've looked at the math. And if you renewed the policy, say at 20 years, it expired, and now you're, you know, 62 years old, well, you could renew, but you're going to pay maybe 10 or 20 times the premium. And if you continue to pay the premium that is now annually renewable and increasing, you're going to probably pay with term insurance. If you stay insured your entire life, you're going to probably pay more in premium than you're going to get in death benefit. It's not a good scenario at all. And with whole life insurance, you are guaranteed to have a higher death benefit than the premiums you've paid in and all of this benefit along the way. So it is a myth that whole life insurance is too expensive.
Okay. So I know you both said that with whole life versus term life, that they're apples and oranges, two different products, two different uses, I guess we should say.
Uses, I think it would be good.
Okay. It's two different uses. Okay. So how does the flip side of that come into it, meaning us, the people? Like, what if I'm not a business owner? What if I'm just a W-2 employee who works 30 years for a corporation? Is infinite banking not good for me because, well, I'm just going to stop. Is it not good for me?
Well, first of all, we think term life insurance is a very valuable product, especially for people that are first starting out or people that are trying to get to their human life value, which we actually, one of the questions that, or one of the statements I get from a lot of people is that I don't want to be worth more dead than alive. And I'm like, that's impossible because the insurance companies will not overinsure you. So don't worry about that. And so usually in a family starting out, it's really advantageous to have term insurance because they can have a lot of coverage in that situation.
I know for us, like we do have some term policies, but for us, it's all about the kids. Like we want to make sure that there's a nice chunk of benefit if we were passed away before our kids become of age, before they reach adulthood. So yeah. I definitely see value there. If you're just trying to get your kids to adulthood, just in case you die beforehand.
That's exactly that. Yes. That is a great reason that, you know, that's income replacement insurance is what it is. Okay. And that's a great, and we say that's great. We're just saying that you can't compare the two as being the same types of products for the same purposes. Now, your question, Dave, is, can it work for the W-2, you know, person, the person that doesn't have a business? Absolutely. And we had Dr. Wade Fowl on our show who actually shows this in a mathematical form, because the cash value can actually be used to actually enhance your other investments. And so here's an example I can give you. If you have $1 million in your 401k, and you're retired and you're taking 4% off of it or 5% off of it to live, that's $40,000 or $50,000. But then 2008 comes along and it drops by, let's just use 50%, because a lot of them did at that time. Mm-hmm. Well, now if you need to have $50,000, you can't just take 5% off of it. You got to take 10% off of it. Well, you take 10% off of it, you're actually taking it off a low asset. So it has to work harder to actually get back to the $1 million. So what you can do is you can have what they call a buffer asset, an asset that's not tied to the stock market. And you say, okay, this year, we're not going to touch my 401k or my IRA. We're actually going to take some or all of the money from our buffer asset. Now it can be a savings account. It could be a reverse mortgage. It could be a home equity line of credit. It could be a lot of different things, but it's a buffer account. We just think one of the greatest places it would be is cash value life insurance. Now we're going to go borrow against our cash value life insurance. We're not going to touch our investments. We're going to allow them not to have to work overtime to get back. And that is another thing that people can then use to actually do it. Now, your other question is, you talk about your children. Luckily, there are still a lot of God-fearing people that really, because when I say that is because a lot of people I sit down with, I don't care about my kids. They're on their own. And I'm, and Rachel's going to, I think, talk a little bit about her book here in a second about that. But there are still a lot of people that say, hey, I love my children. I want them to go out in the world with as many, as much capital to make their lives in the, and if they make their lives better, they're going to make the rest of the world better. And so we're going to leverage up this death benefit of our assets.
What's really interesting is that, and just another way that you can think about this is for anybody, business owner or not business owner, if you're in a position of having some kind of assets, whether that's real estate properties or say it is money in the stock market, and you also have life insurance. So instead of just the investments, say you have the investments plus life insurance. Now, probably you've had a little bit less investments if you use some of your cash to buy the life insurance. So we would take that into consideration. But what usually happens is, imagine the life insurance is not there. You just have the investments. You're going to be in a position, like Bruce was saying, well, you want to live off the interest, but you want to preserve the principal, because if you eat up the principal, you have a lot of problems. Mm-hmm. One, you could live longer than the expectation, and then you're out of money, but you still have years left, which, great for your lifespan, terrible for your living arrangement, right? So that could happen. Or you might be in a position where you wanted to use the principal to leave a legacy for your family and to leave for your children. And so you can only live off the interest, and you're, that's not sufficient to maintain your lifestyle. So if you instead had directed some of the resources over to using something like whole life insurance, and you have a guaranteed death benefit to pay out, what you can do is you can use up all of your assets without that guilt. So you know that there's still this other bucket that's going to replenish everything to pay out to your kids, to leave an inheritance, or it might even be for supplemental income in your later years. But you just have a lot more options, which means you have a lot more freedom and flexibility, and you're not limited to having to do things only one way and be afraid of that scarcity of running out all the time, which is a really primary driving negative way that most people are thinking about money. So it is just, it allows a lot more expansive thinking, a lot more options. And the reason why that's so valuable is that most people think financially in terms of what they need. Well, I need this amount of money to live. I need this amount of money to pay off the house. I need this amount of money to replace my income. I just need, I only need this much. The problem is that is always a limited way of thinking. If you think about what you're the smallest amount you possibly need, instead, if you think about, well, what do I actually want? Then you can dream of what you would like to create in an ideal situation. Well, maybe you would like to provide the opportunity for your kids to go to a better school or have more opportunity. Or maybe you would like to provide the opportunity that if something did happen to you, that your spouse wouldn't have to go right back to work the next day and be able to have some time to wrestle through those decisions. So I'm just going to share from my own perspective. This kind of ties in the whole term and whole life insurance along with the needs and wants. So it was about 3 years ago, we're coming up on my youngest daughter's third birthday. It was that day I delivered her, and I had major complications afterwards and ended up in emergency surgery and hemorrhaging. And it was a long, scary, about 24 hours of our life. And thankfully it was very short lived. But during the surgery, we were not sure I was going to make it. They were giving my husband a report that things were getting worse, and they were getting worse. And he was literally holding our second daughter, wondering how in the world he was going to deal with the potential of having to tell this baby girl and our 8-year-old at the time, 7-year-old, she was almost 8, that mom didn't make it. Like, that was a reality that he was actually facing. And it pains me to realize that I was blissfully unaware, because I was under anesthesia. I had no idea the severity of my situation. But his mind went to the point of realizing that nothing could replace me as the mom of his kids. But there would have been a life insurance check that would have allowed him to not have to scramble to figure things out. And he wouldn't have had to say, I've just got to work, and now I need a full-time caregiver for this brand new baby. But he would have been able just to take time and settle down and realize that he had years that he could have just been with the kids or figured things out. And that's because we both believe in whole life, well, in maximizing our human life value. So we can't do that in our own lives on just whole life insurance. Most people can't. And especially when we first started with life insurance, we were not in a position to say, well, we can put $50,000 or $100,000 a year into a policy to get up to the most death benefit that I can get from the life insurance company, all with a whole life policy. But we were able to say, let's supplement with term insurance. Let's get as much whole life as we can, but also let's get in addition as much term insurance as we can. So that just gave both of us tremendous peace of mind that there would be resources to take care of our children for whatever we wanted to create, not just our needs, whatever we wanted if something happened to us. And then coming out of that, we realized that, you know, if something did happen to one of us or something happened to both of us, there would be financial resources, but where was the guidance to help our children know what to do with that? So at the time we had an estate plan that would have given, you know, each child a certain amount at a certain age, and then the rest of it at another certain age. And we realized that that just wouldn't have fulfilled all of these gigantic dreams and visions that we have for them, for being able to have access to certain relationships and mentorship and understanding in business and go for it in their own life and use their unique skills and abilities to create value in the world. And all of the things that we're becoming aware of and knowing, we want to impart all of that wisdom to them. And so we realized that it was really important to direct the guidance of financial resources. So in two fronts, to give as much as possible to our kids, but not just freely, to give it in a way that has a spirit attached to it, that has meaning, that has a value system, that has a family guidance system that says, here's our values and here's our ideals and here's what we hope and dream for you and here's how you can spend money and here's how we want you to steward these resources, because we want this wealth to go not just from us to you, but from us through you, so that through you, you can instill these values and give more and have tremendously expanding resources in each generation past us. And so that was really the story that led me to writing my book that's getting ready to be released. So that's called Seven Generations, and that's coming out probably this summer. We're in the later stages of working on that, but it comes back to that whole question of where does life insurance fit? And certainly still is a huge value for somebody to answer those questions, whether they're a business owner or not.
So what does the book do? You talked about the inspiration of the book. Can you walk through the book and what it would teach me if I picked it up and read it?
Yes. So the book, the subtitle is Designing a Multi-Generational Legacy of More Than Money. So what we do in the book is we walk through what are the pillars, the three pillars that you need to have in place to have a legacy that is not just a memory of you that is lost in two generations, or a nice thought of a good person that you were, or money that made it a generation down and then was spent, you know, profusely and somebody lived really well and then it's gone. Something much more meaningful than that. What do you need to be able to do that? Well, we realize that yes, the money is important, but it's actually the least important piece of designing your legacy. And you need an estate plan, but that's actually another side piece of designing a legacy. Really, it's about crafting what is your meaning? What is the meaning behind all of the things that you do and what you want to give to your children and what you want to make possible for them? And how do you identify and articulate and write that down? So the book walks you through designing your family guidance system with your family ideals, your values, your mission, and your vision. And then it takes you into understanding what an estate plan is and how to think through not just the legal structure of your estate plan, which most attorneys will do, but how do you think through having relationships that are going to come alongside of you and your children in the event that it's necessary to be able to provide the guidance and the counsel to carry out those plans. And then we say, how do you then create this memorandum, which is a non-legally binding document that supplements and goes along with your trust or with your estate plan that gives guidance to how to steward family resources and how to think about spending for the things that really do matter. The first pillar is your meaning. The second pillar is your mechanism, which is your estate plan. The third pillar is finally the money. How do you think about fueling your legacy with as much fuel as possible so it can go as far as possible? And that does bring in the concept of infinite banking, but even more from a different perspective of family banking, where you can use infinite banking to be able to train children and train the next generation in how to be responsible with using money, because they can access policy loans as well if you provide them the ability to do that. And you might have to vet their business idea or the reason for which they're requesting capital. Then they have to repay loans. They get these training wheels of being able to understand how to put money to good use, not just how to spend it on something that they want today. Mm-hmm. And really be able to understand that stewardship is a tremendous piece.
You hit on something that I just never clicked for me, I guess, is like leaving money for our kids could give them the tools that money's a tool, right? Mm-hmm. Could give them the tools necessary to be able to pay a business coach or mentor,
yes,
to help them achieve or accelerate financial freedom, mm-hmm, within the context of their dreams and their passions. Yes. And I'm like, I never looked at it like that. You just, when you hit on that, Rachel, I was like, I have never looked at it by like leaving my kids money could allow them to hire Dave Menz or Rachel or Bruce or whoever.
Yes.
And that's
Even with today's technology, we could even leave them a mentorship program of ourselves.
Yes. And that's oh my goodness, that's just so exciting. I feel like this is something being created in the moment. I love that you shared that, both Dave and Carla, because not only is money a powerful tool, we can't just think of money as, well, I give them a gift, it will improve their lifestyle and they can just afford more things. Mm-hmm. Or I don't give them a gift of money because it's going to corrupt them in some way. What we need to think about money as is, I love this analogy. It came from Andrew Howell. He's an estate planning attorney. He said, if you have a beautiful fire, you're at a campsite, I don't know, campsite 241, and you've built this amazing campfire, and now you want your children, a child, to go get a campfire going the next campsite over at 243. And how are you going to do that? Are you going to just give them a burning log and say, well, carry this through the forest, try not to burn off your eyelashes, your hair, set each other on fire, burn down the forest? You're not going to do that. You're going to say, no, let me teach you how to be responsible with the tools, how to go collect your own dry wood, how to clear the leaves away so you're not going to set the forest on fire, how to make sure you're responsible and check for drafts and make sure that you're in a position of managing and stewarding this fire well. And then you could give them as much gasoline or as many logs as possible, and you're not going to corrupt them. You're not going to cause a failure. You're not going to be responsible for burning down the forest because you trained them well. Mm. And it's a beautiful thing to realize that money is powerful if it's used correctly. So that tells me then, I don't want to just talk about money and just give money or not give money. What I really need to do, the primary task, I think, as a parent, is to parent well, and to give them the character and the skills and the knowledge and the tools so that they will be successful. And hopefully I have, and you all have, as much running room to be able to invest in your kids' lives as possible. Hopefully we're all, you know, well into our centenarian years before we leave this planet.
122. That's what I'm going for. I'm trying to outshoot that policy.
That is awesome. Well, I'm going for like 117. So you're outshooting me here. All right. So, and I plan to go skydiving when I'm 100. So, but the idea then is, how can I make sure that I give them the tools for success? And if that happens way too early in my life, how can I make sure I've written down, here's the business guidance that I do have for you. Here's all the coaching, the mentorship, every lesson that I've already learned that you can have in your hands so that you don't have to go make all the mistakes that I made. But also, here's the funding to make sure that you can have the experiences and the tools and the coaching and the mentorship and the relationships that you need to be able to get started. That's just a fantastic way to think.
It feels to me like it's just, and I know we're talking parenting for a minute here, but I think this is important. It feels to me like we're just kind of stepping out of that like consumerism behavior or pattern or mentality and stepping into something way, way beyond. Let's superficial, right? Leave my kids stuff and they can go buy a nice house. Okay, they got a roof over their head. They buy a Corvette or whatever. But I mean, is their life much better? I don't know. No. Maybe it's, you know, maybe 10%. But you give them those school skills or resources or mentorship or that'll change their life.
Yeah. And I love Dave, that behind your shoulder, you say your network is your net worth. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so also a part of this is the resources are also people that Rachel and Lucas have put in place that her children can turn to. And they've selected them very carefully so that they know that those people are also mentoring people that will then be the succession plan for that particular person. So they know who to turn to for help. And then the final piece of this, I can't remember what year it was. I think 2015, I actually did a talk at the Nelson Nash Institute that was entitled How to Make Infinite Banking Infinite. In other words, to keep it going. Well, part of this is the trust resources from when a parent passes, goes into the trust, the death benefit, and then the trust takes life insurance out on the beneficiaries. And so now if they come to the trustee and says, I want to start a business, I need $500,000. Okay, in the value system, it says, okay, the business has to be X, Y, and Z. You know, you have to done your due diligence, so on and so forth. And it will provide the funding for that so they don't have to go to the bank or the SBA or so on and so forth. And if the business fails, then upon their death, the trust is the beneficiary, so it gets filled back up for the third generation. That's how you make infinite banking infinite. And the Rockefellers are the greatest example of this with their foundation that happened before the turn of the century.
Yes. And what's so interesting about that is that if you are going to bequeath, I mean, that's a fancy old word, but if you're going to give or gift or deliver wealth and resources to the next generation, ultimately, you have to trust that they're going to do good with it. And the only way you can have that trust is if you've invested well in developing their skill and ability. I guess ultimately the question is, if you're scared your kids are just going to spend everything, the problem isn't the money. The problem is the parenting that has not taught them to truly produce and give before they get. And actually, Rabbi Lappin just mentioned this the other day, but the only way you make money in the world, this actually kind of goes back, Dave, to the very beginning of the conversation that we had today. The only way you make any money is by providing something to another human that they want and need and are valuing enough that they're willing to pay you for it. So you have to be thinking of a little bit more than yourself. You have to be thinking about, how do I deliver a service or a skill to somebody else that they're willing to pay for in order to be successful in business? And there's nothing corrupt about that in the world. That is the most benevolent and beautiful and wholesome way of thinking about the world and operating, that I use my gifts and skills to improve your life. And at the same time, it's improving my life. That's just an amazing way to operate. So it's all about teaching and training that. And so then we've given guidance for us personally, where we said, here's our life insurance. This is a tremendous gift of love to you, that whatever time that you are receiving this, this is something that we've diligently paid for the purpose of knowing that we are giving this resource to you in the next generation. And our expectation is that you would then use that, just as Bruce was saying, to purchase as much more whole life insurance on the next generation possible. And because the premium is always going to be less than the death benefit payout, every generation that the money grows or the money goes to is going to get expansively larger, like a ripple. You plunk a rock in the middle of the pond, or you skip the rock. The first ripple is small and every ripple beyond that is larger. Now, every generation has to choose that. I mean, they have to say, well, this, we're either going to throw off your council, mom and dad, and we're just going to do our own thing. We're going to spend all the money, or we're going to take up this mantle that you have asked of us. And we're going to walk in this way of wisdom in continuing to build wealth and create something more for generations past us. And our hope is that we're investing in our kids well enough that they'll pick that mantle up.
I love that. One thing I do want to make sure we go back to, because I don't want to leave our listeners hanging, is we talked about the five myths.
Oh,
and I think we only hit two of them.
We did.
We got derailed.
So that's okay.
One of them was that it was too expensive. The first one.
That's a bad investment.
Bad investment. What are the other three? What else do we need to cover
One, we kind of, some of them are intertwined, like one of them says it's a scam because you're just borrowing your own money. Why would you want to do that? And we already addressed that. You're not borrowing your own money. You're using your money as collateral to borrow against. That would be like saying, you know, a home equity line of credit is a scam because you're borrowing your own equity because you've already put the money, you've already paid off your mortgage. So that's a scam. Well, that's not what you're doing. You're borrowing against the equity. Mm-hmm. Another one is cash value. It's bad because cash value takes a long time mm-hmm. to grow. That's not true. That's why they're specially designed. Nelson Nash, actually, this was always a contract, and there's pros and cons. Sometimes you don't want have a whole lot of cash value early because you want something else, and that something else is more guaranteed death benefit. But if you want more cash value early, then you pull down the death benefit to get more cash value early in the contract.
So you're saying within these contracts, you can, I don't know if manipulate's the right word, but
pull levers, different levers. Hey, this is what
you can adjust.
Yeah. This is what I tell people all the time is it's an actuarial product. Mm-hmm. So if you want more cash value, you're going to give up some death benefit. Mm-hmm. If you want more guarantees, then you're going to actually get more dividends. If you don't want as many guarantees because you don't want to have to put in, you don't want to have to be obligated to put more premium in every year, well, then you can actually design it like that too. But then you're going to get less dividends. Mm-hmm. I tell people it's a mathematical product. Mm-hmm. If you want more over here, you're going to get less over here. If you want less, more over here, you're going to get less over here. It's not magic. And then the final thing is one of my biggest passions is people say, well, I can prove to you it's a scam because you have the cash value and then you die. They only give you the death benefit. They keep your money. They keep your cash value. So let me use this example. Let's say you have $500,000 of cash value that you built up over the years through premiums, through guaranteed interest, through dividends, and you have a $2 million death benefit. You have a $2 million death benefit. So when you die, yes, the insurance company sends you your beneficiaries a check for $2 million and the cash value stays with the insurance company. So people say, see, I told you, see how it's a scam. They're keeping your $500,000 and they're only giving you the $2 million. Well, that's because they don't understand actuarially how it mm-hmm. works. The insurance company is only charging you the difference between for their risk. Mm-hmm. So they know they are going to get to keep the $500,000. They're not charging you for $2 million of life insurance. They're only charging you for $1.5 million of life insurance. Mm-hmm. But these entertainers don't understand how the math works. It mm-hmm. would be similar to say, hey, I have a mortgage on my home. I've paid it down. It was a $1 million mortgage. Now I have $500,000 of equity. Well, wait a minute. When I sell my home, I want the $1 million and I want my $500,000.
Yeah.
Well, that's absurd. And everybody knows that's mm-hmm. absurd. Well, it's absurd because it works the same way over here too. So mm-hmm. basically those are the five myths. They're kind of over. And like Rachel said, we can give you a bunch more, but those are the five things that come up mm-hmm. over and over and over. This concept's been around for 200 plus years. it's probably legit because there's been a lot of eyeballs on this for 200 plus years, and it's sustained this over 200 plus years. So I don't think you have to worry about it being a scam. It can be a bad strategy for some people. You know,
why? But it, when would it be a bad strategy?
Well, it would be a bad strategy if I came into your home and you're a 24-year-old and you don't have enough cash flow and you work for, let's say you work for a restaurant industry. And so your income is not guaranteed because restaurants go out of business all the time. And so now you get together and you put a policy in place and there's some contractual. Now there is some flexibility, but there's some contractual obligation to continue to make your premium. Wow. So then I would say, hey, you probably should start out with some term. We can start putting some money in here, but let's do it at a smaller, a lower amount until you build up some assets. And then we can actually transfer those assets from the bank into your own personal contract, which we would say to the bank. But other than that, because you can borrow against the policy, there's not a whole lot of downside. If you think keeping your money in the bank is a good thing, then there's no reason why you wouldn't keep money in a whole life insurance contract. Because all we're trying to do is have an alternative place to store cash.
So this I'll add kind of as a last bonus, a side bonus myth here, is that if you're looking for a get-rich-quick scheme, I guess the myth would be there are get-rich-quick schemes. this is not a get-rich-quick scheme. I can't even say that quickly. This is absolutely a build wealth over time plan. This is a person having a long-range focus, not just thinking about tomorrow or next week or 2 minutes from now. They're really thinking about how do I create something that's going to benefit me in my later years, when I will value life insurance a lot more, when I will probably be thinking about my children and what I can do for them more, and when I'm in a position of saying, wow, I really wish I had made better decisions. So the challenge is that a lot of times there can be this thinking that, well, I just need to go try to get as high of returns as possible, which means I need to take a lot of risk and I should just go ahead and do that because no one wants slow, boring returns and saving money is worthless. Like that can be a challenge where somebody says, there's no point in saving money. I just need higher returns so that I can build up a bigger net worth and I can have more money to live off of income in the future. So the truth is that it is very important to be saving. And it's not boring to be saving. And a person who has good money habits and is consistently putting money into savings has such an advantage. That is a cornerstone of building wealth. It is a habit of true wealth creation. This habit of always paying yourself first, always focusing on profit first before expenses, and being in a position of saving. When you do that, then you have the ability to have growth with uninterrupted compounding, which is tremendously powerful. And when you do that, you don't need to just be chasing that get rich quick scheme, that super high return, that super high risky thing that seems like the only answer in today's economy with low interest rates. No, instead, having sound money habits, saving first, and then thinking about how you can use your savings, use your store of capital to borrow against it and put those dollars to work somewhere else. That makes all the difference in the world.
Something I was going to ask, Bruce, you had mentioned that basically this is similar to having your cash accessible and liquid, just like having it in the bank. Are there any restrictions on the policy, though? Like, do you have to have paid so many premiums before you can take any out? Things like that. What restrictions are there that wouldn't be in a bank savings account?
Very good. It acts like a bank, but it's not exactly like a bank. Matter of fact, the insurance companies nowadays are actually putting that on the contracts. This is not a bank. Okay, now it's great that you guys are working with basically business owners, because business owners know that they have to capitalize their business, right? And so they're not going to get a return on their business 100% right away. So you're building something that acts like a bank. So you're actually building a business. So I can't answer this exactly, but I can answer conceptually. So if you put a premium in within 30 days, you should have access to about 60% of your premium within 30 days. Oh, wow. By the end of the year, you should have access to about 70% of your premium. Now, an average, because some people, they don't want access to that much because they'd rather pull another lever and have more possibly in the future. Yeah. Other people would say, I'd really like to have more access within 30 days and 1 year so we can pull another lever. But if you're going to borrow against, it's not always great to pull that lever too far. Mm-hmm. Because you're giving up too much long-term growth then. And we just explain that to people. I always tell people, you still need to have money in the bank. You need to have 15-minute money, I call it. You need to have money that you can drive to the bank or an ATM and get your money. But the excess, I always talk to people, don't you have a floor that your bank account, you know, you don't want it to go past that floor. And then you have a ceiling, okay? And then we work somewhere in between those two. So if you feel like, well, I don't want to go below here, and here's my ceiling, and I can find out through my cash flow awareness where I am between those two, then shouldn't I take some of that money, maybe not all of it, but some of that money up here and transfer to somewhere else where I get many more opportunities in that situation? Nelson used to call it turning that heavy flywheel. It's kind of hard to get it going at the beginning, but once you get it going, it just really takes off. And that's what Rachel was alluding to. We don't want people that want to start fast. We want people that want to finish fast. Okay. And that's the mindset we have. And I believe a lot of entrepreneurs have the same type of mindset. They understand they're building something that's going to give them cash flow down the line and has a lot of benefits.
Yeah. Typically entrepreneurs are long-term thinkers. Mm-hmm. If you're not, you're probably not going to be successful.
Exactly.
That's usually how it works. Yeah. Listen, guys, I know we've taken a ton of your time today. Thank you so much for being here with us. But how can people reach you all? Obviously, by all means, everyone that's listening to this, go check out their podcast for sure. If you like this information and this content, obviously they're interviewing other guests, but they're always throwing their own flavor of things and their own wisdom into every one of their episodes. But either one of you wants to take this. How can people reach you all? How can they get a hold of you, especially if they want your services?
Absolutely. I'll go ahead and take this. So they can go to themoneyadvantage.com. That's T-H-E. I don't know why sometimes people, The Money Advantage. Maybe that's an easier way to pronounce themoneyadvantage.com. And so we have everything available there. What I love is that we have been able to just over close to 5 years now, been able to provide a lot of podcasts, videos, articles. There's just so much for free that you can find out, dig deep and find out more information. We do have a guide on infinite banking. It's also called privatized banking. It's called that on the guide. It just helps you understand the basics of how it works. So you can get that on our website as well. And then if you really want to dig deep, we have a course that you can go through and understand more. We walk you through illustrations and the numbers, and we use some really cool technology to help you really understand how money is working in your life and what the effects of your financial decisions are. So that's all available at themoneyadvantage.com. You can also absolutely book a call with our team. And so Bruce is one of our advisors. We have an advisor team that you can talk with and really just start the conversation of saying, here's what I have to work with. Here's what I'm thinking. Is this possible for me? And what can I do? And then you're just having a conversation and finding out if it's a good fit and working together. I will be the first to tell you, we are not hard salespeople. And everyone tells us that. Sometimes I wonder if anyone who is a hard, really pushy salesperson actually gets any good work done. We're much more interested in building long-term relationships where we are energized and the person is energized by working with us. So, we're an open book in terms of educating and making sure that somebody has the tools and the knowledge to make powerful choices in their financial life. So I think that's everything that you asked, but Also, if you're on any of our email lists through anything from our website, you'll find out about more about my book when that launches. We've had a lot of interviews on the podcast centering on some of those ideas and topics that are in the book, but the book is not live yet. And we're doing some really exciting coaching leading up to the launch of the book right now. But I'm really excited for this to be a project that comes to the shelf and is available for people. But yes, you can find everything at themoneyadvantage.com.
And for everybody listening, we've got all the links for the free call that she referenced and their website and their podcast, and we'll put all that down in the show notes. So go down there and check those out for easy access. Yeah. No, listen, we appreciate you guys. Thank you for being here. Thank you for letting me introduce you to my wife. Thank you for bringing all this wisdom and value. I know we kept you a little bit longer. So we will let you all go, but thank you so much for your time. And, you know, guys at home, when you're listening to this, if you're watching this live, go check out the links. I mean, I've now spent an hour or so talking to them on their show, and now an hour and a half on our show. These people are, would you say, Bruce, before we were online, these people are salt of the earth. Maybe it was after we recorded. He was referring to us laundromat owners, and I agree. There's a lot of great people in our industry. Here's two more like that you're going to want to get to know. And if you're looking for these types of services, according to Rachel, they don't know how to sell anyways. She said they're just going to help you. They don't have anything to sell. They're just here to help you, which, by the way, I heard a long time ago from some really, this was supposed to be a closing thing, but I heard a long time ago that someone told me the best salespeople don't sell. They solve problems.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you guys are actually pretty good salespeople to me. But anyways, guys, Dave Menz, Laundromat Millionaire, coming to you from Cincinnati, Ohio. My beautiful wife, Carla, and our friends, Rachel and Bruce. Thank you so much. We'll see you in season 3 of the Laundromat Millionaire Show. Take care, everyone.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.